Hi, McCartney fans, and welcome to episode 115 of Two Legs Paul McCartney Podcast. We are a Paul McCartney talk show mainly dealing with the solo career of the one and only Paul McCartney. I'm one of your two co-hosts, Tom Hunyadi, and you may know me from my other show, Talk More Talk, a solo Beatles video cast. And as always, I am joined by my partner in crime. He is the backwards traveler. He is Andy Nichols. Andy, what's going on, my friend?
Happy 2021.
Happy 2021, my friend. This is the first show of the new year, 2021. Maccamania is still going strong with McCartney 3. Having a lot of fun with that. I know people are finally starting to get their stuff after 3 weeks of waiting and being frustrated that their stuff was still in Ferndale and then in Pennsylvania and then what the hell, where is it now? You know, so people are slowly starting to get their stuff. I am, believe it or not, just about done. I can't believe it. One more thing, and that's coming from the UK. So
you've gotten all 47 of them?
All 47.
Yeah, well, we're
plus the secret surprise one that not everybody knows about. So we got that one coming too. Yeah. But anyways, like I said, Tom, Andy, we've got a special guest here. We've got our good friend, our musical director, if you will. He's done a wonderful job with our music before and after the show. He is Dylan Seavey. Dylan, welcome back to the show, my friend.
Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it. I'm still waiting on my one copy. but I am looking forward to it. I've been dealing with the stream to get me by. And yeah. I don't know. How are you guys feeling after your initial reaction?
Well, you know, after being underwhelmed with that stupid leak that we got.
Which it was.
Then obviously it came out, and then after, you know, dozen listens or so, I'm totally in love with this album. And, you know, Dylan, why don't you just give like a quick, 2 minutes of your time and just tell us your thoughts on the album real quick.
Yeah, I think it's great. Like we were talking about the other day in our text thread, I think it probably is most organic sounding record since Chaos on Creation, which personally I love. I love a well produced, big production as much as anyone else, but ultimately a lot of, I think his strengths right now lie in his natural craft and being able to create something that sounds really organic. I know for me, a lot of my favorite songs of the last, decade, 15 years have been songs like Dominoes and The End of the End and so on and so forth. So I'm really glad that it has that approach. Deep Down is still the only song I'm really not jiving with too much.
You're not getting deep down yet, are you?
No, I'm with you, partner, on that.
there's nothing really there from a compositional or instrumental. I don't hate it.
It's just too jammy.
Yeah, it's far from the worst thing he's ever done. I mean, if the worst track on all of his records was as bad as Deep Down, then that would be awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, the highlights for me are really true highlights. I mean, from the first time that we heard Find My Way, it was clear to me that that was a great song. I think Pretty Boys is a huge triumph. I think lyrically, it's the best song on the record. Melodically, super strong. Love all the guitar tones, sort of the Leslie effect on the background vocals near the end. I mean, everything, Kiss of Venus, Deep, Deep Feeling, I think is tremendous. I think it is. I don't want to say it's far too early to say it's his best album since X and X and X.
Right.
But it's definitely, I think, his most succinct album in a while. And I dig that, you know. I like Egypt Station just fine. But Egypt Station sometimes is a chore because it's so long.
Right. Yeah. This album, you put it on, and before you know it, it's over. That's how I kind of figured. It's 45 minutes, and it's over. Egypt Station is much longer.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Deep, Deep Feeling is 8 minutes, but I feel like all the other ones are
they
under.
Flow.
Yeah. Is there any other one that's over 4 minutes?
I
guess Long Tail Went to Bird, but.
Yeah.
I think it flows extremely well. I think it's produced great. It's probably the best thing to come out of the pandemic from what I can see so far.
So far. Absolutely, so far. But so listening to it, when you listen to it at first, did you listen to it as a fan first or as a musician first, or were you able to do that both at the same time?
Well, you know, and once we start talking about our main topic today, I'll go more into this, but in general, it's tough to completely turn off the musician brain. Mm-hmm. So you know, that always creeps in there a little bit, but I think ultimately it's when I'm really listening to an artist, an established artist that I know I love, as a fan of that artist, I'm definitely listening to it as a fan first and foremost, you know, keying in on things I like, you know, whether that's lyrics or a melody or an instrumental bit. But yeah, for me, I, at least with Paul or any of the Beatles, it's, I'm approaching this as a fan, but that being said, when I listen to music, I just listen to it as music. Like, I didn't listen to this and think about, like, okay, is this a good Paul McCartney record? Gotcha. I think about it as, is this a good record? You know, because I think that some people fall into that trap with Ringo, where people are like, oh yeah, this is good for Ringo. And I'm like, no, he doesn't need to be graded on a scale. He's a big boy. Like,
right.
Things can be good and things can be what they are.
Right.
I think it's a really good record, and it happens to be by Paul McCartney. And I say that as a fan.
Excellent. Very cool. Very awesome. Cool. So our topic tonight, we're going to be talking about instrumentals, the, you know, the stuff, you know, McCartney peppered throughout his career. We all know Paul as one of the greatest singers of all time, maybe even one of the greatest lyricists of all time. But, you know, he's got some very good quality instrumentals throughout his 50-year career, and they really don't get a lot of attention. And we thought maybe we might give some of these songs some attention. And since our friend Dylan here is a musician, he can talk a little bit about these instrumentals. And since what Dylan, he's, if you don't know, Dylan's worked with a gentleman called Ron Gallo on a couple albums, which are really fine albums. And I have a couple myself. And then you're also with your own band, The Gentlemen, right?
Yeah, mostly defunct because they're all still up in Rhode Island, where I'm originally from. But we get back together about once a year. And yep, we play all my songs, and that's a lot of fun. We actually covered the entire Abbey Road medley the last time we were together.
Very cool.
And there is video evidence of it, but all I can hear is the mistake, so I don't show it to anyone.
Gotcha.
it's not on YouTube?
Oh, it is.
Oh God.
No, I don't know. But a lot of his performances with The Gentlemen are on YouTube, on his YouTube channel, correct?
Yes. Yep. And including, we recently did this past summer, I put together a benefit that ran in early November to celebrate what would have been Tom Petty's 70th birthday.
Right.
And got over 100 artists to do a song for it, and kind of patched them all together to create 7 different concerts that were all raising money for 7 different charities, and got back together with The Gentlemen to do a song for that. And we were super proud of how that came out. So
yeah. I wanted to congratulate you on that. That was, you know, we talked about it a few times, and you know, what you were going through with that. And I'm really proud that, you know, you were able to accomplish something very special. So, you know, cheers for you, my friend.
Well done on that there.
Thank you. It was great for my mental health to be dealing with 100 different musicians and managers and record labels and lawyers and estates.
Send lawyers, guns, and money, baby.
The shit has hit the fan. Hit a full V-gonk at once too.
Anyways, actually, when we get the, we're gonna, you know, get the somehow eventually we're gonna get a solo Beatles a convention going, getting started, and we're gonna get you to organize it. How about that? Huh?
Literally, I've been preparing for that for 3 years. So,
all right, let's do it.
We just gotta find a location. We gotta get the money together. Okay.
Let's get everyone vaccinated up, and we are making it happen.
All right, there we go. 2022. Let's make it happen. Solo Beatles video or Solo Beatles convention. Let's make it happen. God. Anyways, instrumentals. You know, it's, I think, you don't hear a lot of talk about them, you know, especially in the Paul McCartney catalog. There's really not, you know, many, you know, instrumentals with John, George, and Ringo. You know, Paul is really the only one that has
been prolific with them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he's taking it on. And
I think John's only instrumental was what, Beef Jerky?
I think so.
Yeah. Great song.
Yeah. So we thought, well, hey, why not give it a shot and talk about some of these instrumentals, because there's some really good ones out there. I mean, some interesting ones, some not so interesting, but you know, they all have a special quality about them. You know, some good, some bad. But I want to get you just thoughts in general about instrumental, because especially let's start with you, Andy, because you know, I know you're a big prog rock guy, and I know instrumentals are pretty big in the prog rock scene, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, absolutely. But prog rock kind of gets whitewashed as to being all instrumental and jammy, and it's anything right. but that. As we were talking about off air, I was listening to a Yes song from Tales from Topographic Oceans, and it's like 20 minutes long, but it's not just a jam. There's right. lots of moving pieces. Instrumentals obviously are a key part of the prog rock movement, but it's not just like the whole thing is just instrumental. There's lots of moving parts of it. There's pop, there's elements of pop, everything. You know, all kinds of genres that are mixed up in a lot of that music. So right. with McCartney instrumentals, I've enjoyed them more often than not, and I come back to them quite a bit because maybe some of those roots, those prog rock roots, a little bit, some of them, right. especially the ones that he did in the 70s with the synths and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but in general, I mean, are you a fan of instrumentals?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And the fact that, you know, Dylan curated a whole list for us of all his instrumentals. I mean, it's, you know, for all the ex-Beatles, as you said, he's been pretty prolific from the beginning all the way up until, you know, present day.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
You know, out of all the other ex-Beatles, there's a lot to choose from right. that let's be, you know, frank, the most of the public has no clue about 90% of these things.
Right.
Zero.
That's true.
Maybe we can bring a little attention today.
Yeah, exactly. Attention. Dylan, your thoughts on instrumentals?
Yeah. To me, music is music. You know, there's great music across all genres and decades and from around the world. And you know, I obviously have certain preferences, especially when it comes to styles and genres of music. But I try my best not to discriminate, because if you can't listen with an open mind, then you're going to miss out on a lot right. of great music.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I love instrumentals as long as they're good. And it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter to me whatsoever if a band that usually incorporates vocals does have an instrumental. I know we want to talk a little bit more about exactly what an instrumental is, and we'll get more right. to that later. But for me, the concept of an instrumental almost solely exists in the world of pop music. Because, you know, I don't listen to a Miles Davis record or a collection of piano sonatas and feel like I'm listening to an album of instrumentals. It's almost kind of opposite in the world of jazz, you know, because guys like Miles and Coltrane and Mingus, they're just considered jazz. But Billie Holiday, Frank Sinatra, Sarah Vaughan, they're considered vocal jazz.
Right.
You know, you can even look at the first two Fireman records. I don't necessarily think of those as instrumental records, and I'm not extremely versed in the world of house music, electronica, techno, but from what I do know, it seems like a large faction of it generally doesn't include a lot of vocals. But once you get into rock and pop bands where vocals are usually a prominent part of the music, that's where the concept of it comes in. You know, we listen to Flying off of Magical Mystery Tour, and it registers to us as an instrumental, even though it's got the you know, it registers as an instrumental because almost every other Beatles song, if not every other Beatles song, has lyrics in it. So that's how I think about them. And like I said, it rarely, if ever, bothers me when a band I like incorporates them, as long as it's a good piece of music. Like, I love Flying. I think Flying is a super interesting piece of music that adds to that record. Yeah, that's how I feel.
Yeah, I mean, I've always been up in the air with instrumentals in, say, the rock scene, no matter what genre it is. I do tend to, you know, enjoy, you know, instrumental jazz more than, say, rock jazz, you know. I mean, I'm sorry, I mean, rock instrumentals, sorry. You know, I mean, even like if, you know, a favorite metal band of mine would do an instrumental. I mean, they're one of the least ones that I would gravitate towards, you know, because it's just more or less, I'm always looking for, you know, lyrics that, you know, just excite me, or even if I don't care for my, I'm just so, you know, trained to have those lyrics in a rock song that, I mean, a lot of times it takes me a few minutes to really appreciate, you know, these instrumentals. I mean, and it has taken me really a long time to appreciate a lot of these instrumentals that we'll talk about tonight, just because I just feel sometimes they're just wasted. You know, some of them are really good. I mean, they would maybe even be better with some lyrics, who knows. But you were talking jazz. I mean, this is by far my favorite jazz album of all time. However, he does have a couple lyrics in it, you know, so it's just like, sure. Where do you, you know, but I'm starting to find myself enjoying them, you know, more and more as I, you know, venture out. And, you know, there's some really good instrumentals from, you know, like the Rush will have a couple of good, you know, instrumentals, I think, that I've enjoyed, whether Metallica or, you know, Slayer or other bands that just might have a, you know, an instrumental or two.
Instrumentals are probably the best, because you don't have to hear Geddy Lee sing.
Yeah. However, yeah. You know, my cousin is a fantabulous guitar player, and I can't even put it in a genre, because it's just it's really out there. And all of his work are instrumentals, and I find myself having a hard time, you know, appreciating him, because it's, you know, you know, it's not usually my thing, but I think he does a great job with them, you know. So, but I want to talk about, to you, Dylan, you know, what in an instrumental carries it? I mean, to, in your opinion, when you're listening to an instrumental, what is it in there that's keeping your attention?
Yeah, as a musician, if I'm crafting an instrumental, my main objective is making sure that there's something for the listener to latch on to. So usually that's a melody or a hook that's being played on an instrument.
Right.
I want to make sure the tone or sound of that particular instrument is especially noteworthy or pleasing. I also want to be very diligent about creating movement in the song. Because if you have a lyric-based song, you can get away with a monotonous soundscape or chord progression as long as the lyrics are doing their job. You don't have that luxury with instrumental. So I want to make sure that there are different sections that shift well into each other. I want to consider how I can build upon the soundscape to create a sense of growth. And that's generally what I, as a listener, want to hear out of an instrumental. And when I'm writing and recording, I don't want to make something that I wouldn't want to listen to. So yeah, for me, it's mostly about recognizing what you're putting into it, from a hook standpoint, and how you are, organizing those sections, because, you know, like Andy said, talking about like the Yes song, for instance, if a band isn't, or an artist isn't utilizing a lot of improvisation, then, and there's a few McCartney songs like this that we can get into, you run the risk of repeating the same thing over and over again and not filling it in with anything else, you know? And so that's where a band like the Allman Brothers or Yes or Jethro Tull or King Crimson or anything like that, that's where they can excel, because they're great at either being able to jam and solo really well or utilize those shifting sections.
Gotcha. You know, one of the other things, one of the instrumentalists said, like, is like a Herb Albert, you know what I mean? Yeah. And I like how he'll like utilize his trumpet for like the lyrics, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So you can almost kind of like, you know, you're just comfortable with it and you can almost like sing along.
Yeah, that's the best. If that, like Dylan said of it, as a hook, you're right there. Mm-hmm. Chuck Mangione Feels So Good is another one I've always kind of felt. I don't know if you guys know that one.
That's
a classic. You can just hum that song any day. It's a perfect instrumental.
You know, we know that Paul has done a lot of these instrumentals on his own. So I thought maybe you can just take a minute, Dylan, and just kind of like, you know, take us into the studio and tell us what, you know, what kind of work that it takes to do an instrumental by yourself.
Well, actually, I've been doing an exercise since the middle of November with a friend of mine from back home, where we have been writing a piece of music every day and sharing it with each other in the shared Google Drive file, you know, just to keep working that creative muscle.
Right.
And, you know, some days you write a complete song, you know, 3-4 minute song, and other days it's a 10 second little guitar lick or vocal melody. Like, it doesn't really matter. No expectations. Just write something.
Whatever's inspiring and coming down that day.
Exactly. You know, yeah, because some days you wake up with a full song that spews out, and other days I'm sitting wondering what the hell I've done with my life. And that goes beyond music. But sure, that's another story for another time. But
you mean you didn't wake up and dream yesterday?
Well, so there's a funny story. So I woke up and I had this melody, and I could have sworn
somebody else wrote it, right?
Yeah. If you watched any of the last 10 promotional interviews from McCartney 3, you would have heard that story again.
Well, it was crazy too, because then the next night my mother came to me in a dream. So I've been doing this exercise, and, you know, some days, you know, I pick up the guitar and kind of figure out a chord progression or a melody, maybe a vocal thing over it. But then other days I'll go into GarageBand, where they have a lot of different, you know, loops and MIDI sounds and things like that, and I'll create little interesting soundscapes. And for me, it generally starts and if I recall correctly, Paul was saying that this was a lot of his process for McCartney 3 too. It's finding whatever the jump off point is in terms of what instrument you want to play, what mood you want to get across, what melodically is in your head. So like for me, if I'm going to be crafting an instrumental, probably the first thing I want to figure out is, okay, what is the mood of this going to be? Do I want this to be a darker song? Okay, then I might want it to be in a minor key. Maybe I want to incorporate some more pianos into this, because pianos can make everything a little more moody. Where do I want to have my melodic hook drive? Because sometimes the hook is right there in the guitar. Other times you want to be sampling an accordion. You know, sometimes some of these...
You're making up moods in a minor key.
Yeah. Jesus. We're never getting out of this alive. Just in general, it's not, I think, too much different than my process if I'm writing or trying to craft a song with lyrics. It's all about serving the song. You know, what does this need to get either the emotion across that I want to get across or the mood that I want to get across. Yeah, with an instrumental, it's just making sure that I am paying attention, even closer attention to the different layers that are happening. So for, yeah. And I think that that's what Paul was saying for McCartney 3. It's like,
and
yeah,
you think, you figure you already got to have those layers in your head, especially for someone like Paul who doesn't write music, you know, all those layers are in your head and you're, you know, I guess you, you know, getting the studio in a multi-track, you know, and, you know, and just laying all those, you know, layers down. So it's interesting, you know, cause I've heard some, a lot of times he'll start with drums, you know, on instances, you know, or he'll start with, you know, piano or whatnot. So
well, yeah, it's pretty interesting. So drums are my first instrument and I can know too, if I start, you know, making up a beat, then I'm not going to say automatically hear it, but I can think like, okay, this is kind of like a funky, groovier song. So I want to get across this funky, groovier guitar part or keyboard lick. Or if I'm writing something on guitar, then I know if I'm going to switch to the drums, okay, I want to play it straight here. I want to, you know, emphasize it with this. It's just a matter of listening to what you're doing and listening to the music in your head and knowing what's appropriate for it. It was funny going through all these instrumentals of Paul's and finding the ones where he totally nailed it. And then finding the ones where it was like, either did way too much or you didn't do nearly enough. But you know, none of us are perfect.
Gotcha. So I guess the big thing, you know, the big heated, you know, it wasn't really heated, but the bigger discussion that we were having prior to recording is this, whether or not, you know, if there's any kind of amount of lyrics in these songs, is that really considered an instrumental? And, you know, where's the line? I mean, is it two songs? I mean, is it like, for instance, like Heather, okay, we know it's got that long, what, like 2 minute buildup before he actually starts, you know, belting out some lyrics. Now, I would have considered that a lyric. I mean, I would have considered that an instrumental if there was none of those lyrics. And then at the end, all you hear is his Heather bit at the end. I would have probably considered that an instrumental, but then some people do consider it an instrumental just because the, you know, the music is what, 2 minutes before he even, you know, sings anything.
So I think I figured this out. Okay. I'm interested to hear your guys' thoughts on this. Yeah. So I personally consider a song an instrumental, obviously, if it has no lyrics or vocals, or if the lyrics and vocals are not the direct focus of the song. So again, Flying technically has the vocals in it, but for all intents and purposes, that's an instrumental. And it seems as if the Grammys agree with my assessment, because the very first Grammy Award for Best Rock Instrumental Performance went to Rockestra
Theme
by Paul McCartney and the which features the iconic Why Haven't I Had Any Dinner and all the other shouts and stuff. So personally, I'm not going to be that nitpicky when it comes to determining if a song with vocals can still be considered instrumental. You know, technically the voice is an instrument, so I could be a real asshole and say, well, every song is an instrumental.
Exactly. And I'm glad you brought that up too. I mean, cause that is a good point.
Exactly. You know, and for me, it's common sense, you know, Long Tail Winter Bird has the, do you miss me? Do you feel me? But if you listen to that song, for all intents and purposes,
I agree.
The main hook and basis of the song is an instrumental.
Yeah, the structure is all instrumental. Yeah.
And so for me, that's why I still kind of consider Heather an instrumental, because even though it does, I ultimately didn't include it when I was ranking my songs. But, you know, the main hook and basis of that song is the instruments.
Yeah.
Right.
Plus, the lyrics are the worst part of it, so sometimes I pretend they don't exist.
Bingo.
But I think it's a great piece of music.
It really is. It really is.
You know, cringy as the lyrics may be, I never skip it because I think it's a fantastic piece of music.
It really is. I mean, that could have been a Beatles song.
Yeah. If Heather was on the first McCartney record, everyone would love it and everyone would talk about it. But it's on Driving Rain, and it's about a person they don't like, so they get all stupid about it.
Yeah. Yeah, that could be true. That could be true. I mean, I also would say that even if it, like the vocals were like had like some effects on it, like Longtail Winterbird did, you know, mm-hmm. with the do you feel me, how they had the effect on the vocal. I might classify it as an instrumental because it's, you know, not a straightforward vocal,
but it's just more textural thing at that point.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it kind of like almost complements the music in a way.
Yeah.
I don't know if you would feel the same way, but Andy?
No, I agree. I agree with the sentiments. I kind of agree with Dylan that if, as long as the main structure of the song is still in place, there can be some lyrics in it. So I'm fine with still calling these songs instrumentals. I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Classifying it that, because the main structure and hook of the song,
right.
Like Heather, like Dylan said, you know, that for 2.5 minutes. And then we get those crappy lyrics. Forget them. Forget them. Gone.
Thomas Paine wrote a book about it. It's called Common Sense.
Gotcha. Right.
And the main hook of the song is still together and it's there. And that's right. It still is. So that's I'm in that same camp.
So Tequila is an instrumental.
Yes.
I will say though, I would not, and we might have briefly talked about this. I wouldn't call Night Out an instrumental because the main hook of that song is the vocal and plus there is the still technically unreleased version where there are more lyrics and everything, so gotcha. I wouldn't count that, like, because that, when you think of that song, whereas with Long Tail Winter Bird you don't think necessarily, do you feel me, do you think of the like
that's what you're thinking of, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Night Out is not out, not out.
Right.
Forgive the singing.
No, spot on.
What do you think of as McCartney as a drummer?
I think Paul has improved through the years. But I think his drumming has a lot of character to it, and that's why I really like it.
I think it's a big part of some of the instrumentals that he has done on his own is his drumming.
So, you know, maybe one day we'll do the show that we've talked about where I do a full show where I'm actually playing the drums. So Paul has obviously learned a lot from Ringo. Mm-hmm. And if you ever hear people talk about the Ringo swing, it's kind of like halfway. So if something is straight, you know, it's, you know, one and two and three and four and bum 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 bum. Something swung is that shovel, one da 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 da. Ringo is very much in the middle of that, you know, like a lot of those da. So this is all straight right here, the beat, but then those fills kind of give it that little bounce to it. Paul takes a lot after that, and you especially hear that in songs like Mama Miss America.
Miss America,
I mean, you hear it, you know, a couple times over that record, over the Band on the Run record. Mm. I think, Paul is not at all the most technically proficient drummer, but I've rarely ever, except I think the very first time that I listened to a song and thought, oh God, no, Paul, you needed a different drummer on here, was when I was doing this, doing this exercise. You know, something doesn't need to be technically proficient for me for it to be good. I mean, one of my favorite drummers of all time is Meg White, who, you know, if you guys had 10 minutes to yourselves, you could maybe figure out how to play like Meg White. Or even like Mo Tucker from Velvet Underground. I mean, you know, I love things that are kind of off the beaten path. As much as I love, you know, John Bonham and Keith Moon and Ginger Baker and all those guys.
Right. Gotcha. Cool. Very cool. So let's talk about some of these instrumentals. We're gonna give nine, and then we'll discuss those nine, and then we'll give our number one favorite instrumental, and we'll talk about that for a second as well, because I'm sure you know, I'm really looking forward to hearing what you guys' picks for these instrumentals were. But I'll tell you what, I'll start and I'll give my nine. And these are not in any particular order, but I do have a favorite, and then say we'll all save that one for last. But you know, you said "Mama Miss America." That's obviously one of my favorites, and especially for the first half. I mean, his drumming and bass playing, I think, on that on the first half is really superb. You know, just love that rock and roll springtime. Take one. It's just, you know, so just so cool. But then the at the end of the second half, you got that great piano bit there at the end. To end it, which is spectacular as well. You know, I've talked about Karina Kerr on here, so I'm not going to get into that. But it will always be a favorite of mine.
God bless you guys.
It did make my top 10, but I really dig Karina Corey.
Yeah. And that's fine. Whatever. I know I'm in the minority in that, and I'm fine with that. I'll take it.
Get to my list.
You know, an album that we're going to be talking about here on Ranking the Tracks, Andy, you know, Cufflink. I've always been a big fan of Cufflink. I like, you know, that whole synthesizer, keyboards, drums, you know, whatever they're doing on that song. I mean, it's almost kind of prog rocky in a way, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I would. Mm-hmm. Element. A lot of the 70s instrumentals have some of those characteristics to them, as we'll see.
Right. And I really think I really kind of like the way he uses those synths in this more than I kind of like how he does them in McCartney 2 in a way. But one of the ones on McCartney 2 that I really like a lot is Front Parlor, which was one of the first, I think it was the first thing he did for McCartney 2, actually, in the Front Parlor. And I just love the flute effect that he does
on the
on that song,
which might be a Moog or a Mellotron. I'm not sure if it's a Mellotron or a Moog. Might be a Moog.
Yeah, I love the sound of Hang Glide. I know we talked about this the other day, Dylan, but I find it probably one of the better McCartney Stewart compositions throughout their, you know, or during their time writing together. I just love that rainforest jungly type sound that you hear, you know, on that song. Another one that is really growing on me that I could stand a few years back, and that's Squid. I like that opening acoustic. It almost feels like it. You know, I almost feel like Longtail Winter Bird kind of like was born from the beginning of Squid, that the acoustic, you know, opening. And, you know, and then, you know, the keyboards, and then, you know, some really good electric guitar throughout that track. Really like it. And then now here's the line, you know, that we're talking about, whether or not lyrics count in an instrumental or not. And here's 2-2-2, which I find I really like it because it's different from Paul. You're getting more of a jazzy feel from Paul. And, you know, is this the one where he's playing the flugelhorn on?
Yeah.
And he's even playing the horn, you know, on a brass instrument, you know, on this. Really, and it's nice. Yeah, and it's, you know, I love that. But here's the thing, though. We were talking about how his vocals are kind of a little, I guess, maybe some sound effect on there. I don't think that's his actual vocal or not on that. I want to do some more research on that. But it's so, like, kind of like almost like buried a little bit. You know, you don't really hear what he's saying unless you're, like, really actually listening, you know, to what he's saying.
I feel like his vocals on that song, to me, are just an instrument, you know.
Right.
It's kind of fluttering above it. It's not like, here's a set of lyrics that I'm singing to you. It's just an added.
It's almost kind of like he's adding it as he's going, in a way, kind of like, you know, creating as the jam's going in. Another one from that era, In Private. I really like the harpsichord and the tabla sound throughout that sound. Throughout that song. Really cool. And then I'm really, really, really starting to really love Longtail Winter Bird on, you know, McCartney 3. You know, just really great guitar playing throughout that whole song.
That was the first hook of the whole album we heard in the trailer. Yeah. Was like was that opening chords. We're right. Like, what's this going to be?
And I wasn't really digging it at first. You know, and it wasn't until I heard the whole song proper that I'm really, you know, started appreciating what he was doing there. And, you know, and it's great. You know, it's really good. So, and then I'll save my last one for, or I'll save my number one for the next round. So, but so that's my nine. Let's go, Dylan. Let's go with you.
Okay. Well, I'm about to set the Beatles podcasting world on fire, sending shockwaves through the system, because I really like Loop, First Indian on the Moon, and it's my number 10.
Okay.
So buckle up, bitches. I understand there were a lot of great songs recorded during the Red Rose Speedway sessions that could have or should have made the album. And maybe some people don't like this song solely because there were better songs that didn't make it. But I think it's super interesting. It's a moody recording. It's almost like a mix between Mama Miss America and Carina Corre.
I'll give you it's interesting for sure.
Yeah. I love the groove. I think Paul's bass playing and Denny's drumming are killer. Yeah. I love the guitar work. I think the organ and keyboards are layered very, very nicely. The sound effects are cool. They don't ever hang on one section for too long. It's always shifting to a different feel or a different section, and it's always building. And obviously, if I had to choose between having this song in the album or having, you know, I Lie Around or Country Dreamer, I would choose those songs, but I'm not going to hold it against, you know, this song just because Paul chose it. I don't understand why so many people seem to viscerally dislike Loop so much. But there you go. My number nine is the great but unfortunately titled Frozen Jap. not one of his smarter decisions to keep a name when he knew in advance that it might be offensive, but
right.
I really like the song itself. Mount
Fuji might have been a better title.
Well, listen, after that, after January of 1980, all bets were off.
Well, I feel like if all he had to say was like, oh, I didn't know until after the album was released that it was a slur, but he says right out like, oh, well, they told me it was bad. And I was like, oh, no. And then he just kept it. I'm like, dude, like, but anyway, I love the song. I love the melody and I love the tone of the main synth line. Chord progression is sneakily really good and it shifts well underneath the main melody. I love how the hand claps start to work their way in, and the harmonizing that eventually accompanies the melody is very Eastern. There's a short like, counter melody that comes in. And then number eight, with you, Tom, I have the proto McCartney 2 Cufflink. It's kind of got do you guys hear a little bit of Come Together in the main synth melody? Like that.
There we go. Now it's
a little bit.
Yeah, I really dig it. Nice drumming from Paul, actually, on that song. Really good.
Yeah, because that was done after Joe and
Denny were gone. Yeah,
he does.
Jimmy. Yeah.
And the drums sound really great on the 1993 remaster. So I can only imagine how good they're going to sound. Hopefully this year. I don't know if those are real horns or strings or if they're synths, but either the way, they work really well.
And I think they're. I think on that one,
probably synths. I don't think he used any horn players on that album.
Well, he did for I'm Carrying.
Either way, it sounds great. I think it's a nice companion piece to Backwards Traveler. And I think it's fun listening to it in hindsight, knowing that he'd be experimenting a lot more with that in a year. Also with you, number seven, I've In Private. I think the harpsichord's great, drumming's nice. The distorted guitar that comes in to beef up the main acoustic guitar is awesome. It's kind of mysterious, and it's the perfect length, which is something that Paul struggles with.
Throughout his whole career.
Instrumental and non-instrumental. Speaking of which, my number six is Squid. It could be cut in half, but I like it enough I like it enough that I don't mind sitting through 6 minutes.
Because that's about what, 6 minutes, right?
It could be three. but I really like it. So yeah, beautiful guitar work. The synth is a little Mannheim steamrollery for me. But fascinated by all the melodies and the progressions. Right. And there's a movement and a consistency to it that's not annoying. Like, you know, apologies if either of these being end up being on your list, but like Hey Hey and Christian Bop both have these really, like, Hey Hey's got that synth that's going the whole time, and Christian Bop has the dun 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 dun,
right,
you know. And at a certain point, I just want to like find a guillotine and cut my head off because I can't deal with it. With Squid, there's that consistent rhythm to it too, between what he's playing in the guitar and the synth, but it always feels nice. It's never annoying.
Right.
My number five is Mama Miss America. I love mostly that the bass takes center stage on it.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yep. Piano and electric piano are both great, doing his best sloppy Ringo impression. You know, it's fun. It's organic. It's raw. I think it's a lot of what I love about that first record put into one recording. Number four, I know it's so soon, but I've also got Long Tail Winter Bird. That lick is so simple, right, and so effective. I love that he changes it up a little bit each time. You can tell that it was a very improvisatory thing. The upright bass sounds incredible. It grooves so hard, and it's so powerful when the drums kick in. Like Squid, could have been cut in half, but I love it, and especially with this one, because the sound is so organic, I'm willing to give it more time because the production is so good on it. And I love it as an album opener. Number three, I've got Sing Along Junk. It's tough to argue anything about it. Gorgeous melody, beautiful guitar playing. The sound of the guitar is perfect. The piano sounds so mournful and beautiful. And, you know, Tom, what you were saying, like, you get used to having the lyrics, you know, to tell you what's going on with the emotion to feel. It's like, you don't need it in a song like Sing Along Junk. You know what the mood of that song is, especially because of that piano. Love the drumming with the brushes and the sizzle cymbal, the mellotron bass, like everything about it. It's flawless, and it's only my number three. And my number two, also from McCartney One, is Hottest Sun, Glasses.
Wow, really?
I love this song. I love the acoustic guitar hook. I love the tone of the guitar. The shaker adds a lot to it. The bass is always moving at the perfect pace. The keyboard interlude, I think, is fantastic.
Right.
And again, the perfect length. Like, he plays through it once. The outro is super fun, and the way it transitions into Glasses and that excerpt of Suicide is so creepy. It's so creepy. And it's so fantastic. The production, the way he put this piece of music together, I think is perfect.
Yeah, so I think it's the shaker that doesn't do it for me on that song.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I like it. Yeah. Each of them.
Cool. Yeah, no, excellent. Good choices there. Andy?
Okay, so 10 through... 10 to 2. Okay. Kicking it off with the aforementioned, much misaligned, Heather. That's my number 10.
Okay.
That's just, again, crappy lyrics at the end, as Dylan said, but God, that melody on that song could have been on any earlier McCartney album. They would have been singing its praises for decades. Another song. Nice to see that some songs are actually on all three of our lists. Mama Miss America, number 9, for both the reasons you guys said. Number 8, a song I haven't heard yet, Zoo Gang.
The theme song.
The theme song from Zoo Gang. Somebody who loves synths, who loves 70s prog rock. I love all music with a lot of synths. So I dig that stuff. It's corny, it's cheesy, I know it is, but I just dig it. You know, I love that sound. To me, that's quintessential Wings when I hear that thing. I love it. I just dig it. And Dylan doesn't, but that's okay.
You can have Zoo Gang. I'll take Get Me Out of Here.
Okay. Number 7. This kind of falls into that. Is it an instrumental? Is it not? Blue Sway. Which I really, really dig off of the archive edition of McCartney 2.
Right.
With or without the Richard Niles orchestration.
Right, right.
Both versions are great. Great little groove in that. You know, you could, that's a song where you could just, you just totally immerse yourself. You know, you can imagine just like being in the ocean listening to that song. It's just, it paints a perfect picture for that. I've always liked that one quite a lot. Number six is the B-side to Give Ireland Back to the Irish, which is just called Version.
Version, right.
Which is just called
Version. I was hoping one of you guys would have that. It just missed my top 10.
That is a phenomenal recording. It's simple. It's twee, but it's fine. You know, there's a lot of flutes on that. I don't know if there's some of those Irish whistles and stuff are on that. I don't know without looking it up and reading it. But I've always enjoyed that one I have a lot of Wings heavy instrumentals on my list. So that's why for that one. Number five, I can't read my writing.
Don't you have to teach penmanship at school?
No, here we go. Number five. I got it. Number five, from a similar time, from a few tracks ago, Crossroads, which I'm also very keen on. If only for Jimmy McCulloch's playing on it, which is like really good. And I know when we ranked the tracks in this album, a lot of people had this up high too as well, even from that album. It was not the worst track in the album ranked for me. It wasn't.
Wouldn't be my bottom either.
It's not. Listen, I love it. More Wings, more 70s synths. It's in there. Number four, another song that's on all of our lists, Squid, which I'm very happy to see that we can all agree that Squid is certainly up there for all-time McCartney instrumentals. I remember being like just totally gobsmacked with that when I heard it in 97 as a B-side on that single. I was like, right, what in the hell is this? This needed to be out. And then the fact that I found out it was recorded, you know, 10 years prior.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing. Another song that I have not heard either of you say, and I thought I'd heard at least hear one of you say it. And again, falls on that. Is it or is it not? But I think it is Rochester Theme, number three for me.
Yeah. See, I just find. Yeah.
What?
It. Well, I can talk about more when we get into the ranking of the tracks on Back to the Egg. I just find it boring. I mean, here you've got some of the greatest artists or musicians of all time, and that's what you come up with.
So what?
Well, yeah, look, it's disappointing know what it could have been.
I suppose you're right.
You have all these hotshot players, but for what purpose? Because you don't listen to it and say, like, oh, there's Pete.
Right.
There's John Paul Jones. Or this, yeah.
I mean, Wings could have done that, right? And just, like, double-tracked and double-tracked. I mean, you know what I mean? And just...
No, but I like it. Forget who's on it. I like it as the, I like it. I like the, sure. I like the chord progression.
That's all that matters.
I understand. Yeah. Right.
I don't care who's on the track. I mean, the fact that they're on it, fine. I enjoy the song for what it is. And, you know, and the live versions, you know, when they play it, you know, he screams Happy New Year at the end of it. You know, that's like awesome. I've always enjoyed it. Is it simple? Could it have been more given who's on it? Yeah. But I've always enjoyed that track, a standout track for me for his entire career. Number two, Dylan mentioned it. It was pretty high on his list. It's high on mine. Sing Along Junk, as featured in Jerry Maguire. I mean, just, you know, I like it better than Junk, actually. I'll play Sing Along Junk more than I will Junk. And I love its placement on the album. You know, you've already heard Junk on side one. You've gone through side two of the album. You're getting towards the end of it, and you're like, "Oh, what's this? You're hearing this? You know the album is closing, and now you come back to this just beautiful piece of music that puts you at ease and relaxes you before Queen of Crore.
Before Maybe I'm Amazed.
I'm sorry.
Before I'm Maybe I'm Amazed.
Oh, whatever. Bandy. I know it's pretty close. Yeah, I know. Five points off for me. Well, even so, Before Maybe I'm Amazed, which is even better sequencing, really. I mean, think about that. Sing Along Junk and then Maybe I'm Amazed. I mean, that's...
And then Karina Croyd, a great trilogy.
Yeah, great trilogy.
The trifecta, if you will.
The trifecta.
Yeah. Like you got Godfather, Godfather 2, and then Godfather 3.
That's right. And that's a good movie, too.
But not classic.
No. So those are my nine.
Gotcha. Cool. No, I like those nine too. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure we'll talk about the Rockestra when we do Back to the Egg. It's just, yeah, I just don't find it interesting enough. I mean, it's like the Let Me Roll It situation where it's just the
Oh.
same riff throughout the whole song, and I mean, you had some great guitar players there, and why couldn't there just been like a 10, 15-second guitar solo or something? You know what I mean? Just to break it up a little bit,
Yeah, I feel pretty over it by the minute 30 second mark. I'm like, okay,
of Rockestra?
yeah.
Do you?
It's
Yeah.
just, again, yeah, I'm with you. And like, I know you can't necessarily listen to something like you said, Andy, the only thing that matters is that you like the song. You like the piece of music. That's all that matters. It doesn't matter who the hell is playing on it.
Right,
Really, it
exactly.
never does. I never
Yeah.
listened to it. I never looked at the liner notes and said, "Oh my God, John Bonham's on it." Or John Paul Jones, I have to listen to this
Yeah.
because they're on it. I liked it because I loved the riff instantly in my head.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
That's
"This
all that
is."
matters. But I
Yeah.
guess it's like, but at the same time, it's like, it does sound huge. Like, but what was he brought in all those guys, you would think, for a purpose. But
Yeah.
it feels like it has no purpose again, because it's like, I don't hear John Bonham on the drums there.
Right, so what was the point? Yeah.
I don't know. And the main thing for me is that, yeah, I'm also not super in love with the music. I don't hate it. It's not my least favorite. But
Right.
yeah, for me, conceptually, it's disappointing. And then musically, yeah, I don't think it's
Always been very
appealing.
intrigued with the creation of that song, because if you go back to the bootlegs, you can listen to it and hear it, how he grew that song as a piano
Yeah.
demo on the piano tape from 74, just banging it out
Right.
on the piano. And then when we got Wingspan on the DVD in 2001, they included for the first time the Rockestra film and seeing him at the piano, and then with the studio
Right.
musicians. Like, so there's been a lot of actually history with that song, so it's like partly nostalgia. I mean, I like it, but
Understand. No.
yeah,
Yeah, I mean, I
but
wouldn't put you down for liking it. I mean, and to your point too, Andy, is you say, if you don't realize who's on it, then you're not going to have that thought. Okay, well, Gilmore, you got Townsend, you got all these great got people on it, and then this is what you get, but
right. I mean, I listened to the record as a kid, and I'm like, okay,
yeah.
time for the last song on side one, or first song, whatever it is, first song on side two. And I'm like, oh, this is pretty rocking. I really like this.
I would like to amend your statement, Tom. You said we don't want to put you down, Andy. I
Right.
actually would very much like Andy to feel bad about this.
Okay.
Oh,
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
stop, you guys.
Yeah, no, I could see where some people think that this is just a little bit of hack, lazy writing. I could see that, but I'm a sucker for things that McCartney does that others might seem crappy. I mean, again,
Yeah. No, I mean, fine.
be curious to see where how people feel about Rockestra when we rank the
Oh,
tracks.
absolutely. That's one of my favorite parts about doing that series. Okay, number ones. You guys, I'm really happy that you guys had the song so high because it is my number one, and it's a comfort song, really. And Dylan, you did a masterful job with this. Because it was one of the songs I asked you to do, or and it Sing Along Junk is just it's just the perfect thing. And you talk about how it doesn't have the lyrics, but the piano and the guitar kind of make up for it. And you just it just you can just be like listening to it, and it can just like take you away to just like someplace else. You know
It
what I'm
does.
saying? And you're just not. Your body's there, but your mind is just like off in a happy place. You know what I mean? Or whatever. But it's just like you see, I mean, it's a perfect instrumental. It's beautiful. The piano playing and the your guitar playing, like you said, Dylan, I mean, is excellent. And You know, it's just one of those beautiful moments where, you know, like where George, he starts off with "Oh My Love," you know, with how he did his guitar pit or yep. his guitar playing mm. before that song. I think the song is just as beautiful with the guitar playing on that. I mean, it could rival that in a way, but yeah, I mean, I just think it's like the perfect instrumental in McCartney's
song. And obviously it's a song he feels pretty close about yeah, because I mean you listen watch it on the end of Unplugged when Plugged, they play right. Unplugged and they close the Unplugged show. I mean yeah. that place, can you imagine being in the audience for that when they play that to close the show and they yeah. play Sing Along Junk?
That'd be
you know,
incredible.
Oh my God. Well, I would just watch that and left.
That was kind of my inspiration for you know for Dylan doing that, you know,
which closes out our show like yeah, every week. Right. So it was so awesome too. So yeah.
I'm happy that my half baked facsimile that isn't half as good works so
whatever,
well.
Whatever. Don't
I mean, I did a good job, but it's no single.
Yes, you did. Job. Thank you. There you go. That's what I want. I want the smart ass Dylan. Yeah. All right, Dylan, what about you, my friend? What's your number one?
My number one is probably going to make people as mad as my number 10.
Oh, boy.
I absolutely love riding into Jaipur from Driving Rain.
Wow. I do too.
I think it is an unbelievable soundscape. The acoustic guitar sounds amazing, and I'm
like almost like a sitar. I mean,
he's playing it, I'm pretty sure, on a short necked guitar, which doesn't have as like big bodied full sound as a normal acoustic. It kind of has this thinner sound to it, which gives it that sitar like sound, very, very ethereal. His piano playing on this song is,
yeah, it's beautiful,
unbelievable. It's marvelous that the tabla loops are perfect. The tempura drone is like a chef's kiss. The electric guitar tone is phenomenal. The bass work is stupidly good. And the way that they're all interweaving with each other, the instruments are talking to each other. You know, when it starts doing the descending line, the ba-ba-dum, 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 you know, hearing. Yeah. Well, certain instruments are going with each other, how certain instruments are following it, hearing how everything expands. I think it's magnificent, and people would lose their shit over this song if it was on Electric Arguments.
Right.
But it's on Driving Rain, and so everyone hates it. But every drone loop, every individual part and performance on this song is fascinating.
I'm gonna, because you have that rank so high, I mean, I really owe it to myself to listen to that track again, like in earnest, properly, because I probably have only listened to it maybe 10 times in 20 years.
Yeah.
So since owning the record, so I really need to, I really have to give it, based on your kind of awesome recommendation of it, I'm going to revisit it because I was never into it. I listened to it, was like, but I really need to revisit it because that's some heavy praise there.
It's one of the songs I gravitated towards when I got Driving Rain. I love it. Yeah. I
went to Tiny Bubble. So
yeah,
I like Tiny Bubble too.
And I will have that song ranked really high when we do our Driving Rain.
Like in April? Like in April?
Yeah, right. I feel the exact same way as you do, Dylan. I mean, I do feel there's a bit many lyrics in there to include it. You know, I mean, even though they
as many lyrics as Blue Sway and Long Tail.
Yeah, still, I mean, I just feel like there's, I mean, yeah, it does, but it's kind of more constant in a way, I think.
But when you think of riding into Jaipur, do you think of those lyrics first, or do you think of the
I know they're coming. I mean, but it's not until you play the song that the music actually is what you really are paying attention to.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Exactly. I mean, I think the vocals on the song are also, I mean, just phenomenal. I love the filter he has on them. I love when he starts harmonizing with himself. And then I love when he's singing only the harmony and it becomes a counter melody to his original melody. I mean, I will die on this hill. I think this is a great.
I think it's. I'm proud that you chose that as your number one.
If you allow me, I have the driving rain. I'll just read the track notes here. Recorded February 16, 2001 onto 8-track analog tape, then loaded into Logic Audio for overdubs. Paul played Martin, Backpacker acoustic guitar, then overdubbed Hofner bass guitar to vocal. Abe played the Roland Hansonic with African drum samples. Rusty played the Tampura, and then overdubbed Gibson Electric, 12-string guitar. Gabe played piano. David overdubbed a synth.
Oh, so that's Gabe on piano then.
Yeah, you got to talk to Gabe about that.
And speaking
that.
Of Gabe,
yeah,
we'll mention that in a second. But yeah. Andy, let's get your number one.
Yeah.
My number one, which was on Tom's list a little bit higher up on the ranking, is Front Parlor from McCartney 2.
Wow.
Again, that's just a... That's a mashup of kind of like the drum machine going through, pulsating through the whole thing, the whole way. The synths kind of cycling through with these bright, bright sounds, happier sounds, culminating in this huge explosion of like positivity. The best way I could describe it towards the end of the song. And then you like the synth just starts kind of just doubling and doubling and doubling and into like explosion of like just a awesome bunch of sounds that come out of this song. I love the full length version on the archive, which was even like 2 minutes longer. I've always been fascinated with this song. It's like a trance almost. I'm not in a trance when I listen to it.
Yeah.
It's the perfect song to go driving to and just kind of just turn your mind off, you know, and just go. I've always dug Front Parlor. Doesn't mean a whole lot, but it's to most people, but I have always loved that side of him to just say, I'm going to go and just throw this all together and see what we come up with and see how this sounds. And, It's for me. It's always been number one, and it's always been a favorite of mine from that record.
I had a feeling it was going to be on your number one when you labeled it as a big yes in our shared Google document.
I tipped my hand there a little bit.
I like the main melody to Front Parlor quite a bit, although I wish the melody stood out a little bit more over the drum and that like frog sounding loop
thing. Yeah, yeah.
It always sounds to me like that's the real
thing. Yeah. If the main hook of the synth could have been more of a front than over that like frog sounding thing. Yeah. I love that way to describe it, Dylan.
Yeah, when people talk about the frog chorus, I think of Front Parlor.
Yeah. That's my numero uno. And God, if anybody hasn't heard that, any of our number ones, go check them out.
Yes, please.
I'm glad we all had three different ones.
Oh, absolutely. I was
better. Yeah, it's better that way.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think I was too worried that I figured we would have some similarities, but I had a feeling our number ones would.
But what our universal choices in our top tens were what? Squid?
Sing Along Junk.
Sing Along Junk.
Mama Miss America.
Mama Miss America. We're all our commons that all three of us had, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, and I think it's understood, sort of like an unsaid thing, that Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reggae is really everyone's number one. But.
Right. Well, you know, to you guys listening, what are your favorite instrumentals throughout Paul McCartney's solo career? You know, make sure you leave a comment. If you're watching on YouTube, you can leave it in the comment section there. You can, if you're listening to the audio platform shows, you can email us at twolegspodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear what your favorite instrumentals are. Maybe we can start up a conversation. Dylan, I really want to, you know, I want to thank you personally because, you know, Andy and I, we've been having some luck getting a bunch of musicians on lately, and we really want to, you know, kind of, you know, steer a little bit in that direction, not just, you know, talking about, you know, the songs or albums. I mean, there's so many great stories out there that we're looking for, but you were very instrumental, if you will. And,
hey.
Hey, it was right. And connecting us with Gabe Dixon. And I'm proud to say that he'll be on the show later this month, probably the last show of January. And I just wanted to personally, you know, thank you and say, you know, good on you. And, you know.
Oh, of course.
Thank you. Thank you, man.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to what he has to say. You know, a lot of people don't look at that period of Paul's career very much. I feel like everything that he did in between Flaming Pie and Chaos kind of gets lost, you know.
Yeah, well,
record between Run Double Run.
Run and right. Wingspan.
Yeah, the classical stuff. And, yeah. You know,
Liverpool Sound College.
Yeah. Right. So I feel like it's going to be great to have him on and get that perspective. You know, especially a younger guy too. I mean, it's been so awesome listening to Jerry Murata and Dave Maddox and all these guys. But I'm interested to see, you know, because I think Gabe's only in his 40s. I could be wrong on that. So he was really, really young.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't that long ago. At least I'm telling myself it wasn't that long ago because I remember.
It's 20 years ago now.
20 years ago, almost, yeah.
We all remember it. And you make a good point about that period between Flaming Pie and Chaos because so much happened. And then in his own life, losing Linda. Mm-hmm. But he also wasn't sitting on his hands doing nothing, you know, Run Devil Run, as you mentioned. So there was an album that really has been kind of forgotten about with Driving Rain here. Yeah. So it'll be really refreshing to hear Gabe's perspectives on where Paul was as he
the mood of the sessions.
I mean, it's a very darker record, Driving Rain. Yeah. It's a heavier record. You know, it's got, you know, so I mean, but it'll be very cool to hear Gabe's perspective working with Paul at that time. And I remember, like, I just wish the album had staying power, you know. But it just doesn't for me, and maybe that'll change. I don't know how you guys feel.
Yeah, I mean, that's an album that, I mean, I loved right off the bat. I mean, I played this album a month straight.
Yeah.
I shit you not. I was in my car for a month straight.
Same.
And I mean, by the next weekend, I had every line memorized, of the album. I mean, and I had my favorites, obviously, but I mean, I wasn't skipping any of the tracks. I was just playing that album, you know, straight through. But however, through time, I mean, it kind of, you know, unfortunately has taken a little bit of a I think time hasn't been
nice
friendly to this album. Yeah.
No, because when he comes out of the box with Chaos and Creation, I mean, come on. I mean, it's, you know, it was just he's been on a blitz, in my opinion, since that point to through now.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I quite like Driving Rain. I mean, it's not a top five Paul record for me, but it's far, far, far from the bottom five. And I think what bothers me more than anything is just hearing and seeing so many people so blindly dismiss it, like, oh yeah, well, you know, Driving Rain, right. Like that, you know, put it at the bottom of the list. Right. And I believe your good friend Joe Mayo calls it thriving pain.
Well, he's coming. He's starting to come around a little bit to it.
And I think too, Dylan, is like, I think when you have such a stack of other great albums, it's like there's no more room for it for most people.
Well, sure, but I feel like there's a lot of record. Like, I feel like the general consensus, like, so Andy, I know for you, London Town is a top two Paul record, but I think most people kind of have London Town as like a mid tier in the middle.
Yeah,
but Driving Rain, the best stuff I ever hear about it is like, oh yeah, no, I like that one fine. Like, which fine, maybe that is the ceiling for it, but some people talk about it like it's the worst thing he ever did. And
I think it suffers a little bit from too much. I think there's like too much on it.
Yeah,
on the record.
I mean, it's a long record. He didn't
long record.
Yeah, and he didn't need to put Freedom on there.
No,
he didn't put Freedom on there. Maybe a little better cover, maybe, you know, I don't know.
Sure.
Changes but, people's opinions
but,
of it.
But I am really excited, like you guys said, to hear what Gabe has to say about that. And then he also played at the concert.
Played
for
the concert for New York.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Well, I'm very anxious to talk to him about that because, Yeah, I mean, Tom and I were talking about this last week. It just, you know, very interesting song choices for Paul to close that show with.
Yeah. Yeah, what was he did? I'm Down.
I'm Down.
1985?
Okay. No. That wasn't 12. That was 12.
12.
Thank you. Okay, yes. Sorry.
I'm Down. Yesterday.
From a Lover to a Friend.
From a Lover to a Friend.
The only time they did that live.
Right, but like, just why at that venue? That was not the venue for that.
Because I actually really love that song, but that's probably the last song I choose to play at that
at that show. You know,
right?
Yeah, I think it was. I think it was. I'm Down. Yesterday, did he play Lonely Road? Yeah, Lonely Road. He did Lonely Road. He did a couple. Did Lonely Road. Lover to a Friend, and then probably Let It Be, I think.
And then Freedom.
And then Freedom. That was the set list. And, you know.
Driving Rain, I think, is 16 tracks. You know, it could probably be a. My cat is yelling about Driving Rain in the background right now. you know, it could probably be a 12 song record.
Yeah,
I agree.
I'm not a huge fan of like spinning on an axis and things like that. Like it's not a perfect album, but I could rattle off probably 7 or 8 Paul records. I'd easily, you know, listen to Driving Rain over. And that's the thing. It's like, yes, I was young when it came out, and when you're growing up, those sorts of things affect you. But you know, listening back and trying to listen with a critical, analytical mind, I still think it's really like I loved the Russian album growing up, and now I revisit the Russian album. I'm like, okay, Gatsby, what's your favorite Paul instrumental?
Yeah,
that's funny. Anyways, maybe Squid. You know, is she a fish fan?
Yeah. Squid, Fishy Matters Underwater. He's a big fan of.
I just remember the anticipation with this because it was his first new album since Flaming Pie. And Linda, and was like, what's this going to be like? You know?
Right. It got good reviews when it came out.
It did. And I remember for a while, it had it had a rumored working title of Blue Skies. They were going to maybe call this album Blue. I remember reading that. They said, oh, his new album is going to be called Blue Skies, back on like the AOL Beatle forms back in the day.
Blue skies.
But anyways, Dylan, thank you very much for joining us for this show. We had a great time. Anything you want people to find you anywhere, or you got anything you're working on, or I mean, what you?
I prefer to not be found.
Very good.
No, not working on too much right now. Done some recording, over the course of the pandemic, not a whole lot. Did some tracks recently with a really great singer-songwriter named Tim Easton. He should have an album coming out this year that I play a bit on. I'm playing on about half of the new album by a great singer-songwriter named Aaron Lee Tazjian, which I was just in a music video for that just came out, a great song called Computer of Love. In which we play a video game band in outer space, and it's a lot of fun.
We'll have to check that out.
Send it to you guys.
Yeah, send us
please
link.
Do.
Kind of got like an ELO meets Wilco feel, which I really, really dig. So, you know, have some of that coming out, but hopefully when things start to get a little warmer in March, April, May, and more people get vaccinated and things start to be safe again. I don't know if, you know, touring as we've known it will be exactly back this year, but I think there should be a decent way to figure out some outdoor shows, you know, where people can be distanced and things like that. So I'm hoping to play a little bit more music this year, but at the moment I'm sitting here at my house, copy editing terrible car insurance pieces and working on my own Beatles project that I'm not yet announcing because I want to get it at least halfway done first.
Understood.
But yeah, cool. That's where I'm
at. All right. Andy, anything you want to add before we sign off?
Thank you to all our fans and supported us in 2020 and got us off the ground, so to speak, on YouTube, and really kind of supported us with ranking the tracks and all the new series that Tom and I are doing. So keep those comments coming on YouTube and like and subscribe our channel, please. We hit 400, so thank
yes,
you.
Yes, good point. Yes, we just hit 400 subscribers. So yes, if you are familiar with our YouTube channel and you have not subscribed yet, please do. That'll really help us out. We got to 400 relative. When we hit 300, we got to 400 relatively quickly. So let's see if we can keep this train moving along. Yes. So we really appreciate that. A lot of comments that we really appreciate. I mean, my God, it seems like every day there's a couple more comments that we need to that we need to read on these shows, and we really do appreciate them. We love to see how you rank these albums, the tracks on these albums as well. So we really dig that. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Two Legs Podcast. So check us out there. Like our pages, please, if you will. YouTube is Two Legs, a Paul McCartney Podcast. So that's where you'll find us on YouTube. Email us at twolegspodcast@gmail.com. And man, yeah, that's about it. Hopefully everybody's still, you know, McCartney 3 happy. You know, here we go. This is the blue box. It's not that blue box over there, but it's
a big blue one.
Well, it's not a big blue one, but it is. It is a box. But
that, anyway, that one goes out to Ed Crawford.
Yeah, there you go.
He's our big Broad Street friend.
Yes, that's correct. So everybody out there, thank you again. We hope you all had a wonderful new year. And here's to bigger and better things in 2021. And everybody, as always, have a great day and a beautiful night. Take care.
Listening to Two Legs, a Paul McCartney podcast, hosted by Tom Hunyadi and Andy Nichols, with musical contributions by Dylan.